The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We've now reached the time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers. The leader of the official opposition party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Nova Scotians are wondering if an assault trial was obstructed by a member of his cabinet when he refused to testify and give evidence that he might have. Mr. Speaker, the Premier would have us believe that the member for Dartmouth East was acting on his own. But that member says he was acting on the instructions of the Premier's office. I'd like to ask the Premier directly, did the Premier or anyone in his office speak to that member about his duty to give testimony at that trial?
The Honourable Premier.
No.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as you know, this is a serious matter. There was an assault trial. It was dismissed because a member of the Premier's cabinet refused to do his duty and provide testimony that could have led to a decision by a judge, guilty or not. Mr. Speaker, this scandal has now been linked directly to the office of the Premier. I take the Premier at his word, but it leads to the question, why did a member of the Premier's office, specifically his chief of staff, then text that member the day the trial was dismissed and say it was good news today, and I'll table that for the benefit of the House, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. I think he's reading part of the message that was sent to the member from Dartmouth East, Mr. Speaker, in the context of what took place that day. As I've said very openly to the media, Mr. Speaker, my staff had spoke to that member, said, let us get an opportunity to see what's going on. As I've said already, the parliamentary privilege that was used, we had no idea if it even existed. When we called the Department of Justice, we were looking for information. Mr. Speaker, when we gathered that, we immediately called that member, told him he would make himself available the next morning at 9 a.m. to speak to the media. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, the information that I was given by that member was inaccurate. What went on in that courthouse, when we found the information, I did what I believe Nova Scotians expect me to do, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that the people standing around me giving me information is truthful to the best of their ability at that moment, and I couldn't rely on it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the fact is the Premier's Chief of Staff texted the member the day the trial was dismissed for lack of evidence and said, good news today. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Premier says that wasn't all that he said. Well, that's fine, Mr. Speaker. Let's enlighten the House now about this message, because what a horrible message it is to send to those Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, that we expect will show up at trial and provide evidence on something as serious as an assault. I'd like to ask the Premier to illuminate the House. Why did his office consider it good news today when that trial was dismissed?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, we have, from the very beginning, Mr. Speaker, have allowed the justice system to take its course, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member and his lawyer made a decision on behalf of each other. Mr. Speaker, when we got the full information, we reacted accordingly, and I believe acted in the way that Nova Scotians expect us to.
The Honourable Acting Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last week the member from Dartmouth East invoked privilege to avoid testifying under oath in a criminal matter before our courts. And the trial judge stated, and I quote, "If he was any other citizen, a warrant could have been issued for his arrest." Mr. Speaker, you would expect that the top lawmaker in our province would condemn this type of behavior to assure the public that members of the House of Assembly are not above the law. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. Instead, the Premier told Nova Scotians that the member from Dartmouth East had his full confidence. So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is, why did he express confidence in a cabinet minister who a judge was prepared to issue a warrant for last week?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, Mr. Speaker. As I stated in my earlier question, I was provided information about that member in the morning, which I discovered in the afternoon was inaccurate. Mr. Speaker, at that moment, I responded to the way Nova Scotians would expect me to do, and they expect all members of the Executive Council, and I indeed all members of this House, when they're speaking to the employer, give them the full story, Mr. Speaker. When I found out that wasn't the case, I responded in the way that I did.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This has nothing to do with when the member decided to invoke privilege, Mr. Speaker. Last Wednesday, the Premier should have removed the member from Dartmouth East from his cabinet and caucus for refusing to testify in court, but he didn't. Instead, Mr. Speaker, the Premier's office assisted the member from Dartmouth East in preparation for a press conference that took place on Thursday morning, and according to the member, the Premier's office even prepared the opening statement. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this: who in the Premier's office collaborated with Mr. Younger in preparation for the comments he made to the media on Thursday morning last week?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Honourable Member for the question. As I said, on the evening before at 7 o'clock, there was a message sent to that minister that we expected him to stand before the media to answer the questions after we'd received the full information. He replied back, said he'd like to meet with, Mr. Speaker, the Director of My Communications, Chief of Staff, who did. The statement that was prepared, Mr. Speaker, was Mr. Younger's words, the member from Dartmouth East's words, Mr. Speaker. It was his actions. He's the one that has to take responsibility for that, Mr. Speaker. When I received the entire information, the remainder of that day, I responded on the way that I believe Nova Scotians want their government to respond.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, members of the public are questioning the Premier's judgment and his role in the series of unfortunate events that took place last week involving the member from Dartmouth East. So my question to the Premier is this: when did his office find out that the member from Dartmouth East would invoke privilege, and why wasn't he advised against this course of action?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as we said many times to the media, the night before the member was to appear in court, he called my chief of staff, laid out a whole sort of issues related to his department, and mentioned privilege. Mr. Speaker, at the end of that conversation, without giving any detail, the first I heard of it is when it was happened in the courtroom, Mr. Speaker. That was it. I've laid that out at every opportunity we have. Mr. Speaker, and contrary to what the Honourable Member believes, Nova Scotians actually appreciate the fact that I responded the way I did.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Actually, Mr. Speaker, what Nova Scotians would appreciate is a consistent set of answers to this question from the Premier. In January, the Premier told Nova Scotians through the media that the member for Dartmouth East had requested a leave of absence, Mr. Speaker, and that was quoted widely, and I'll table that for the benefit of the House. Last week, the member for Dartmouth East himself said that he was forced to take a leave of absence. He hadn't asked for it. He was forced to take one by the Premier's own office, Mr. Speaker. Then the Premier changed his version of the story and confirmed that that he could either take a leave of absence, that's what he said to the member of Dartmouth East, or he's going to have one provided for him, clearly being forced to take a leave. So my question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is which version of his is correct? Did the member ask for a leave, or was he told to take one by the Premier's office?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to take people back to last December. The Honourable Member was a victim in an assault, Mr. Speaker. All of this House remembers he had multiple death threats on him, Mr. Speaker. He had issued that he suggested to all members of us that he had health issues. Very clearly said to him, Mr. Speaker, he needs a break from his duties. And I said to him, he either takes one, Mr. Speaker, I will provide him for one. He chose to take one.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Premier's Chief of Staff says good news today to that member when the trial is dismissed. Premier's given two and now actually a third version of whether he was asked to take a leave in the first place or not. Mr. Speaker, no wonder. Nova Scotians are questioning the Premier's judgment in this area. Mr. Speaker, an assault trial is at issue here, one that was frustrated because a member of the Premier's Cabinet didn't go and provide evidence that could have resulted in a decision by the judge, Mr. Speaker. The Premier put that member back in Cabinet when all of this was outstanding. So I'd like to ask the Premier, are we really to believe they didn't directly talk to the member for Dartmouth East about these issues before he readmitted him to his Cabinet?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I hope the Honourable Member isn't suggesting that any member of government, Mr. Speaker, should put themselves in the middle of a criminal case, Mr. Speaker. What happened was we spoke to the Honourable Member back in December, made it very clear the issues he had to deal with at that time. Mr. Speaker, he could come back to me to tell us when he was ready, go back into the Executive Council, and he would be part of the mix if there was a change going on within the Executive Council, Mr. Speaker. I've continued to say that. It's been consistent with everything that's gone forward, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, last week the Honourable Member made a decision that he's going to have to respond to, Mr. Speaker, not members of this government. All I know, Mr. Speaker, when people sit around the Cabinet table or in this caucus, I need to count on the fact that I'm getting all the facts, Mr. Speaker, to the best of their ability and not a version of them.
The Honourable Acting Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, after months of claiming he didn't know why the member from Dartmouth East had taken a break from Cabinet in December, the Premier finally admitted last week he himself had forced his Energy Minister to take the leave of absence. And to quote the Premier, we made it clear to him that he needed to take a break. He could either take the break on his own or we were going to provide one for him. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. And incidentally, on January the 29th, the Premier told reporters the member for Dartmouth East had, and I quote, reached out to the Premier's office for a leave, when in fact he had been pushed out by the Premier. So my question for the Premier is, why did he not disclose the true nature behind the member from Dartmouth East leave of absence last December?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I hope the Honourable Member isn't suggesting that anyone in this House, someone in her position, if a member of her caucus gives a personal information, that she should walk out and find a microphone and stand in front and give that information. That is up to the Honourable Member to provide that. We made it very clear. The challenges that the Minister was facing at that time, Mr. Speaker, I said to him, you either take a break, Mr. Speaker, or we'll provide one for you. I would hope that any employer in this province that has a member of their team who is a victim of an assault, Mr. Speaker, has three death threats that have been mailed to their office, Mr. Speaker, and comes to them saying they have health issues, I would hope that any reasonable employer in this province would suggest to their employee, take a break, let me know when you're healthy, Mr. Speaker, and we'll bring you back in.
The Honourable Acting Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know of any reasonable person, particularly a Premier dealing with a Cabinet Minister in these circumstances, who wouldn't be able to say, you need to step out of this position while this matter is before the courts and go to the public and tell the public we told him to step out while this matter is before the courts. How tough is that, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, back on January the 29th, the Premier was asked under what circumstances the member from Dartmouth East would be allowed to return from Cabinet. And the Premier's answer, and I quote, we'll have that negotiation. We'll have that conversation. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. What happened during those negotiations that convinced the Premier to put the member from Dartmouth East back into the Cabinet?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Member for the questions. I said here before, Mr. Speaker, when the member took his leave, Mr. Speaker, it was made clear to him, as it's made clear, Mr. Speaker, to all members of this caucus, that when there's a change to the Executive Council, All members will get an opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to be viewed as part of that decision-making process that happens. The member who was the Minister of Energy had performed well in the Department of Energy, Mr. Speaker, when we came to time to make a shuffle. His credentials brought it back into the Executive Council. At the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, I was not given the full story last week, and my decision was to remove the member from the Executive Council. I stand by that decision, Mr. Speaker, and Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, appreciate it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, this summer many families who have family members suffering from mental illness came to this House, along with experts and other service providers, to call for a public inquiry into our mental health delivery system. They shared their stories, their frustrations, their anger, and their disappointment that a system that should be there for them has fallen into crisis and has let them down. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier now answer the call of all of those families and call an inquiry, a public inquiry, into the state of our mental health delivery system?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, this is an issue that touches all of our families across the province. We as a government have invested an additional $17 million as, on top of the budget that was there, which is now at $270 million. We've invested in Schools Plus program for early identification, Mr. Speaker, if there's any adolescents' mental health issues coming. The Minister of Health has continued to put this as a priority within his department. We'll continue to work with our partners across this province to ensure that when families need services in this province around mental health issues, they're there, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is that that is not good enough. In fact, the Minister of Health is on record as saying there is no crisis in the mental health system. But, Mr. Speaker, thousands and thousands of Nova Scotia families know otherwise. We proudly introduced two examples in the gallery today of people who have lost a son or have lost friends because of mental illness that was known to the system at the time and that they were let down because they didn't get the treatment they need, Mr. Speaker. If that's not a crisis, I don't know what is, Mr. Speaker. So will the Premier at least acknowledge that there is a crisis in our system, and then go on to call a public inquiry so we can get to the bottom of why people are not getting the help they need?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the questions. Mr. Speaker, I too want to pass on to those families, Mr. Speaker, who have lost loved ones, as all of us would be touched by in various ways, from either personally or the people we represent, Mr. Speaker. I want to again tell the Honourable Member that we've invested additional funding into mental health issues, continuing to work with our partners to ensure that any, Mr. Speaker, weaknesses that may be in the system we've been able to respond to, and we'll continue to work with those partners to ensure that we provide the supports that families and citizens across the province require when it comes to the mental health issue, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In July, the Minister of Health and Wellness outright denied that there's a crisis in the mental health system. And since then, many Nova Scotians have come forward and told him and other MLAs about their experience with the mental health system. And they know that it is in crisis. So my question to the Minister is, does he still believe there is no crisis? Or does he agree with Fran Morrison and the hundreds of other Nova Scotians who know there is a crisis in the mental health system?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that question. And it is important that we take a look on a continuous basis at our delivery of mental health services across the province. Indeed, there are individuals who at times are in crisis. What I do know is that today in Nova Scotia, several thousand people will get the help for them, a family member, a loved one, with the mental health care that they require.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
But Mr. Speaker, the Minister knows that there'll be thousands of others who will not. The percentage of the health budget that is government spends on the mental health care is about half of the national average, about 3.55% in Nova Scotia versus 7% nationally. According to the most recent Nova Scotia Health Authority business plan, this government cut mental health spending by $25.6 million, while administrative spending went up by $33.3 million. So my question to the minister, Mr. Speaker, is how can the minister look at people, like people that are visiting us here today, like Fran or Laurel, in the eye and say that mental health care is a priority for his government?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to say that in each of our two budgetary years, we have put more money into mental health. I'm not sure what statistical analysis the member has used. $270 million currently, and that was bolstered by $17 million over two budgets. The School Plus program is an exceptional program upstream in the early years. We have added to the community capacity of mental health delivery. We now have a full 24/7, 365 crisis line with professionals available to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to my colleagues here. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. In defending her $152,000 cut to the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, the Minister of Community Services questioned whether they, and I quote, know who they help and if it's making a difference. I have that document to table. Mr. Speaker, I can assure the minister that CNIB knows better than the government who they help and what impact it has supporting people with vision loss to lead independent lives. Why hasn't the Minister of Community Services reversed her cut to CNIB?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for her question. We work with well over 100 organizations, and I'm really pleased with the support that we provide many people, and we've had a great relationship over the years with CNIB. I do know what they do. That quote was actually attributed to another organization where we really didn't know what they do because of the lack of reporting structure set up within the organization and the department. When there are times of fiscal restraint and when there are times when you look at what you need to do to right-size granting organizations so that there are no gaps in the system, which there currently was when we came into government, it's time for those gaps to be filled. And we've been doing that over the last year, and I'm really pleased that we're still able to support the CNIB and the great work that they do as it pertains to the mandate.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Mr. Speaker, over the last year, CNIB helped 2,312 Nova Scotians who are blind or partially sighted. It's clear that the CNIB's work saves the government money by lowering rates of isolation and reducing falls and hip fractures among Nova Scotians living with vision loss. Has the Minister of Community Services asked the Minister of Health to pick up the funding shortfall to vision rehabilitation therapy that she has created?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. Actually, the situation is very fluid. We are discussing where we can best align resources to work better with CNIB between the Department of Community Services and the Department of Health. And those conversations will be ongoing in the next couple of weeks, and we look forward to the outcome of that.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question this afternoon is to the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, a number of months back, we had an unfortunate incident on Highway 101 in Falmouth. I'm sure the Minister is aware where Exit 7 was damaged by a truck and trailer carrying a large piece of machinery. And I wonder if the Minister could update the House this afternoon on the status of that overpass and structural integrity and plan for replacement.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the member for the question. The member has been very much engaged in this particular issue for the last number of months, so I appreciate his work on that on behalf of his constituents and the people in the region. That we have awarded the contract during construction. We'll do that work. We're in the pre-meeting, pre-job stage now, so we're probably 2 to 4 weeks away from beginning that project, which will take probably about a week. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just as a quick follow-up, it is now designated 18-ton or under for passage on that overpass. And I just want the Minister to confirm, following the assessment on that, that that is more than adequate and safe for passage over.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, the focus of the repair, it's a full integrity repair, so we'll be back to the normal weight. So I know there's been some questions there with reduced weight, but we'll be back to the normal load once the repairs are fully completed. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you will be to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, too often we have heard of young Nova Scotians who take their own lives. We know that mental illness is involved in most suicide cases, particularly depression. Some individuals who died by suicide did so after reaching out for help in the healthcare system and not receiving it, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister is, Nova Scotians like Laurel Walker and Fran Morrison know that the system is in crisis and failing people. When will the Minister of Health acknowledge that there is a crisis and begin to work to fix that system and help people like Fran and Laurel?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank the member for raising that question. It is of one of concern to many, many Nova Scotians who may have trouble with access or getting the immediacy that is often needed with mental health support. What I do know after meeting over the past 4 months with psychiatrists, the psychologists, the counseling therapists, school personnel, is that we are indeed doing a great deal, but I can assure the member opposite, there is more to do, and that will remain a priority for us.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Minister in his response left out one very important part of the equation, and that's the families and the parents of people that are affected by mental illness. And why would he not think that they are important enough to talk to? The suicide rate actually rose in Nova Scotia between 2000 and 2011, and Mr. Speaker, I'll table that document. We know that suicide can be a result of many things, such as personal crisis caused by divorce or illness, social isolation from unemployment, drug and alcohol addiction. Mr. Speaker, depression and other forms of mental illness are high. If that is the question I have for the Minister, is this. If the rate of suicide has risen, will the Minister concede that this system is failing Nova Scotians? And indeed, we need to have an inquiry into mental health in the province of Nova Scotia today, right now.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. After conferring with many people in the healthcare system, those who are providing mental health to individuals, to families, every one to a person have said that at this time it would not be the best use of resources. We have put in place now a 24/7 crisis line right across Nova Scotia, and we know that many have been helped.
We'll let the Honourable Minister respond. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I do know is that on many fronts, there are help to Nova Scotians. I've been able to speak at a number of suicide prevention conferences right here in the province. There are many, many ways in which community support for mental health is continuing to expand, and that's what all the professionals are saying we need most is community-based mental health support.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Health. In this year's budget, funding for mental health services were drastically reduced. Furthermore, many important community organizations had their funding cut as well, limiting their ability to provide services for those suffering with mental illnesses. A report by the Canadian Centre for Economic Analysis determined that the indirect and actual cost of mental health services amounts to more than six times the annual budget for those services. Even more startling, the report projected the cost of the mental health budget would increase by $1.4 billion by 2041. And I'll table that document. So my question is, why would the minister make so many reckless cuts to grants and funding when our need is projected so quickly to outpace our resources?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the member opposite very well knows, that it's not always a case of putting more money into programs, but rather it's taking some of the great recommendations in the mental health and addiction strategy. Together we can. There are 33 recommendations there. We are on a full course to have all of those recommendations in place over a five-year period. That's what the strategy outlined. We have 18 months to go. We will continue to invest in mental health support in this province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the minister is making cuts now, there is no way we'll be able to spend $1.4 billion on mental health in the future. Wait lists are already incredibly long. People cannot afford to have them increase, as we know. The minister must act to improve service delivery now, allocate funds where they are best used, and ensure Nova Scotians receive the help they need as early as possible so we can afford to provide these much-needed services in the future. Has the minister personally considered the impact of $1.4 billion and how it will have an impact on our health care system in the future? And if so, when can Nova Scotians expect this plan?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As I said in the previous question, the strategy Together We Can has in fact been recognized across the country for the strength that is embedded into 33 recommendations. They will all be implemented. We also know that in many communities there are not wait lists. This is why the provincial health authority, we need to get as many services of the same equity and of the same standard delivered right across Nova Scotia, and that's the goal of our government and the current strategy that we have.
The Honourable House Leader for the NDP Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm concerned that the government and the community Minister of Community Services acknowledged the work that the CNIB do and still went ahead with the cuts, Mr. Speaker. The CNIB ensures that people who lost their sight can prepare meals, cross the street, manage their medications. When a Nova Scotian requires rehabilitation for reasons other than vision loss, as a result of a stroke or a hearing loss, for example, rehabilitation services such as physiotherapy and access to audiologists are provided within the healthcare system. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, how can the government expect the CNIB to provide these vision rehabilitation therapies, not providing or therapies not provided by his department, when their funding has been cut by 30%?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thought it was going to my colleague, but I'm pleased to answer it for the former Minister of Health. During the summer, I met with CNIB and certainly, got a full conversation, a full dialogue on the full extent of the programs that they deliver across Nova Scotia. And there's certainly indeed valued programs. I met again today, and over the next couple of weeks, we will certainly have to look at what's happening in the short term. But what I told CNIB today is that sustainable funding and their place in delivering rehab in the province will indeed be protected.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, they've made cuts at the CNIB now that is affecting the work they do. and it is going to affect the services that people with vision loss will be able to obtain in the future, Mr. Speaker. The CNIB had already eliminated 5.25 full-time positions, and their executive director has stated more cuts are imminent, Mr. Speaker. I hope the minister realizes what the next cuts mean, either mobility specialists who provide White Cane training or the independent living specialists who teach the blind or those with vision loss to organize and label their medications will be laid off, Mr. Speaker. So the government has to act. When will the Minister of Health provide the sustainable funding for vision rehabilitation therapy the CNIB needs to help Nova Scotians dealing with vision loss?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that important question. Certainly, the conversation today was a very productive one, and I know CNIB were pleased to know that we will look at the short-term crises that they're currently in, but more importantly, keeping their highly qualified staff in the long term with sustainable funding and what approaches will be needed were part of today's discussion, and I think we'll hear certainly positive news in the coming weeks.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Justice. The independent evaluation of the mental health court in Dartmouth shows that the mental health court team was better at meeting the unique challenges of participants compared to traditional court proceedings. The mental health court is working as it was intended, and that's a great thing for people living in HRM. Unfortunately, there are no mental health courts in any other part of the province. So my question for the Minister today is, when will the Minister expand the successful mental health court to other parts of the province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. I actually had the opportunity to go to the mental health court very recently and sit in for part of the afternoon and was very impressed with the different approach that's taken there and the personal care that everybody from the judge to the legal aid lawyers that are there, the prosecution lawyers, everybody's very well trained, very well aware of the issues, and it's a very intense program that they have there that's been successful. I agree with the member opposite. It's one that we're looking at. It's been done as a pilot to see how it would work, and I think the results are coming in positively. From that, I can't tell the member exactly when we'll be expecting to expand that, but we do have another program similar to that for drug addiction in the Valley.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for going to the court and seeing firsthand what prosecutors and participants already knew. And I would again ask the Minister, I mean, in light of what the Minister saw with her own eyes and in light of the first recommendation of the independent evaluation of the mental health court, was that the province continue investing in mental health court as an alternative means of dealing with offenders. We all know the facts are on the table. This is a good thing. Now we have a government that sees a good thing, knows it's a good thing, but won't tell us that they're willing to expand it so other people in the province can benefit. So I'd like the Minister to commit today to tell this House, when can we see that court expanded, as opposed to seeing a good thing and just letting it ride by the wayside.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Speaker. And certainly we recognize it's a good thing. It's helping a lot of families, and it is an important component of our justice system. But it's something new, and it's something that we had to monitor and evaluate. We also have to find the right people in each location to do that. The success of that court is very much, I think, driven by the judge who sits at that particular courtroom and has taken such an interest in leading the way and really bringing all the other justice players together to do it. So it's not something that you can just dictate that it starts somewhere else. It has to be a coming together of the important players who can make it a success. And I will simply tell the member opposite that we are looking very carefully at that, and we are excited by the opportunity, but we have to take our proper steps. Thanks.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. More than 3 months ago, the government announced their decision to temporarily close the short-stay mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital in Glasgow. This decision was made much to the dismay and disappointment of the people of Pictou County.
The minister cited staffing issues as the reason for the closure. Those 3 months have passed, and now we need a plan. My question to the minister, when will the short-stay mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital reopen?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As the member opposite knows, he asked, by the way, a very, very important question for the people of Pictou County. We know that this is an operational matter for the Nova Scotia Health Authority. I know they're involved with recruitment, but sometimes, you know, that is a slow, laborious, difficult process. What I do know is that the team that are currently there are providing many of the services with mental health delivery. I know 7 have been placed in appropriate facilities. 42 others have gotten the community support that they required.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, members of the community have spoken out about the dangers this closure poses to those in need, and others have been very vocal about their experiences in that unit, saying it saved their life. Mental illness exists all over this province, and to close down a mental health unit in one area only puts increasing pressure on another, where other people are in need already. Staffing issues, especially in our healthcare system, need to be addressed proactively. The government does not have time to waste when it comes to mental health care delivery to Nova Scotians. My question to the minister, how will the minister ensure the mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital reopens and issues like this do not cause units to close in other areas across the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. These short-term psychiatric units are a very, very important part of the acute care delivery system for those people, families who are in trauma and immediate crisis. They work very, very well. Sometimes we do have unexpected leaves of psychiatrists or psychologists or psychiatric nurses from those areas. And sometimes, you know, even with the best plans, we are not as quick to respond. We have the money to run this unit, and we hope to have a fuller report very shortly.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since August 3rd, the mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital in New Glasgow has been closed. At the time, the Minister of Health indicated that it would only be a temporary closure, but well over 3 months now, Mr. Speaker, the unit is still closed. The Minister and the Premier have blamed the ongoing closure on the lack of appropriate staff to staff it with, but we know that there's mental health nurses who are working at the Aberdeen, but just on other units. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, can the Minister outline what staff he is looking for and the process he is using to find these health professionals?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The recruitment is being carried out by the Nova Scotia Provincial Health Authority. It's obvious in this case here that a psychiatrist is required if they staff in the same way that they traditionally have. We have heard from some of the staff there that that current needs are being addressed, and in fact we've had confirmation that those who have come through the ER have received the needed help that they require.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope the Minister isn't indicating that everything has been on hold until the amalgamation of the District Health Authorities. If it has, that's complete incompetence, Mr. Speaker. There are challenges in mental health across the province, not just at Aberdeen, Mr. Speaker. There are people who need the support of health care, mental health care providers today, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, what has he done and his department and his government done since coming to power on recruitment and retention of psychologists here to our province in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In the case of Pictou, in the case of the Aberdeen and the short-term psychiatric unit, it was in fact a sudden loss of personnel, and I know immediately The provincial health authority sprung into action to start a recruitment drive. And while we are in session, I will have an update on where that process is.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. The Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act requires that all records which deal with matters of government be kept and archived to be available to the public. This is not limited to only government email. And so what procedures does the government have in place to ensure that email using private email accounts, text messages, BBMs, PINs, and so forth are archived and not deleted?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy. The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Yeah, that's what I'll say. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And there are a number of ministers that have some responsibility for the Freedom of Information Act. So what I would say to the member opposite is that I'll certainly look into that. I'm not sure of the exact coordination that we have for archiving all of that information. I think it's important and an important question for us to look into. So I will endeavour to get back to him directly. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that answer. Mr. Speaker, when ministers personally review FOIPOP files prior to approving or amending them for release to the media, political parties, and others, what steps are in place to ensure the responses include a review of all records, such as text messages, PINs, BBMs, and the use of private email?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Speaker. And these questions are really important and vitally of interest to all Nova Scotians. Again, he's asked, the member opposite is asking for some very specific details about how the reports are put together. And so I will endeavour as well to look into that. And I promise to get back to him on it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Immigration. Mr. Speaker, it is important for Nova Scotia to play its part and welcome the Syrian refugees who have faced horrors and atrocities into our province. The federal government has announced that Canada will accept 25,000 refugees before year's end, only less than 2 months away. My question for the minister is this. In order for Nova Scotian families and communities to play their part and help the influx of refugees, we must first have an idea of the number of individuals that will be arriving. Will the minister inform this House the number of refugees this province will accept?
The Honourable Minister of Immigration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite for that very important question. I'm pleased to say that Nova Scotians in every part of this region want to support the national humanitarian effort that is taking place across Canada. Information from the federal government, though, is critical. I've had one conversation with the federal minister last Friday, and I am anticipating speaking to him again tomorrow or very early on, in which we will get more information. What I can tell the member and all Nova Scotians is that we are leading, we are provincially pulling together all stakeholders and all government departments, universities, municipalities, all sectors to play a part in this. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, my question, I continue on. It is essential that the refugees who are welcome to our province are provided with real opportunities for employment as soon as possible, and this will require tremendous effort and coordinations with stakeholders such as ISANS and other community groups. In this year's budget, the Liberal government slashed funding for ISANS by 25%, and I will table that. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the minister is this. How does the minister expect an organization like ISANS to perform this critical task for many incoming Syrian refugees with a slashed budget? And what additional resources will she provide to help organizations like ISANS help integrate the Syrian refugees?
The Honourable Minister of Immigration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, Nova Scotians want to help in this humanitarian effort, and we will work with the rest of Canada. As to the member's point, the provincial government, we did not slash funding for ISANS. On the contrary, the funding that was slashed was from the federal government. It certainly was not from the province. More importantly, what we did in the province is we've given funding to the Y to hire 7 coordinators across the province in seven parts of the province so that they can help us with settling immigrants and newcomers to their regions, which has never been done before in this province.
Progressive opposition question. I have PC on my list, but if the NDP member is ready to go, have at her. The honourable member for Dartmouth South.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. In an article in the Lighthouse Now, the Premier said he wants, in quote, the province's film and television industry to get back to work and stop complaining, end quote. And I'd like to table that article. And a chart from IASTI Local 849 that compares the amount of work the amount of work its members had last fall under the old Nova Scotia Film and Television credit, and this fall with the new Film Incentive Fund. The drop in jobs is dramatic. How can the Premier expect people in the film and television industry to get back to work when there are no jobs?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to welcome her to the host, Mr. Speaker. I want to also thank the members of the film and television sector, Mr. Speaker, who have been creating jobs in this province. We've seen a number of productions that have taken place, and we're continuing to work with them, Mr. Speaker, to ensure Mr. Speaker, that the film industry is alive and well in Nova Scotia. I believe what the quote that the honourable member was referring to is that the reporter asked me a question about the fact this had changed the industry and all of the activity was going on, and I said, Mr. Speaker, that I felt the complaining that was happening inside of this province is setting a signal outside of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, that they didn't want anyone to come here to go to work. On the contrary, we want people to come and go to work.
The honourable member for Dartmouth South. Order,
thank
please.
You.
Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, would you please call public bills for second reading?
Now call public bills for second reading.
Mr. Speaker, would you please call Bill number 112, the Children and Family Services Act?
We'll now call Bill number 112, the Children and Family Services Act, amended. The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I am pleased to have the opportunity to speak to Bill 112. As the member for Colchester-Muscadabit Valley said last May, it was surprising to us that the bill was introduced before the consultation period was completed. And we hope that more consultation has taken place since then.